Astonishing Legends Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. Today I am thrilled to bring you an episode of an all-new podcast by RHPB guest fan and my good friend Dan Zetterstrom. Now, Patreon members will remember Dan from the episode where he shared his experience visiting spirit healer Michael Chapman, who is the son of George Chapman, who was featured in the RHPB episode Surgeon from Another World. Dan is a great guy. He's kind, he's intelligent, he is relentlessly curious, and his show, What It Means to Be Human, dives deep into the mysteries of consciousness, humanity, and the anomalous. Now, this episode features a really fascinating conversation with comedian, actor, and writer Michael Ian Black from Reno 911 and Wet Hot American Summer. Their talk touches on everything from John Keel to orb sightings, to near-death experiences, to the collective unconscious, to Michael's growing discomfort with the politics and personalities orbiting official disclosure. This is a fun, fast-moving interview. I think you guys are going to love it. Now, you can find What It Means to Be Human on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and really anywhere else you get your podcasts. So go find it, follow it. I really think you're going to love it. Here we go.
One of the, I think, most compelling aspects of the UFO story is what it means for humanity's relationship to itself. Because if we get conclusive evidence that, yes, there is this one or 1 million other intelligent civilizations and or species out there, that fundamentally changes the narrative that we tell ourselves about who we are and our relationship to each other. And it would seem to me that it would negate that overwhelming lust for power that certain people have to lord over other people, because now it's not about that anymore. There's something much more fundamental going on, which is that we're part of a galactic or universal life system.
Today we are joined by the MIB, Michael Ian Black. You might know him from amazing things such as his podcast, Have I Got News for Your Ears, which also you might know from Have I Got News for You. They kept a weekly news with amazing guests. Michael has an amazing Substack where he shares thoughtful reflections on current economy, politics, current events, everything. And he also stars in some of my very favorite comedies of all time. They came together, Wet Hot American Summer, and you probably saw him in the recent movie Superman that came out this year. But Michael, I would say you seem to be multitudes. How do you introduce yourself to people?
I try not to. I mean, if anybody, I think a lot of people who do what I do feel frustrated by the question, what do you do for a living? Because I don't know how to answer it. I'm a writer, I'm an actor, I'm a comedian, I'm a podcaster, you know. I'm a public speaker. I'm a host. I do all kinds of shit. And I'm into UFOs.
And that's what we're here to talk about. And I love that you said that, because really, you know, it took me a long while to understand. I grew up doing art and I worked in film, kind of behind the cameras. I worked as a DIT and a focus puller. And really I've learned over time is that just creative is what people are. And the mediums kind of change project to project, you know, whether you're a writer or
and
whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I think of it. I mean, because to me, yeah, creative expression is kind of creative expression, whether it's acting or writing or directing or whatever you're doing. It all feels like the same thing to me, just sort of refracted a little bit differently.
Yeah, I get you. That's a well put.
Which is also how I think of the phenomenon. I mean, just as a whole. I mean, it seems to me that like it's just one thing, one meta thing, and we have no idea what it is.
Seems so. Well, let's get into it. So, how did you find your way to the UFO subject? What's your origin story?
I don't remember a time in my life where I wasn't interested in it. I mean, one of my earliest memories is a UFO dream I had. And I know your listeners are going to be like, was it a dream? Yes, it was a dream. To the best of my knowledge, it was a dream. Interestingly, though, I'm already anticipating the comment section of your podcast. Because interestingly enough, I had that same dream twice as a child. I don't know that I've ever had any dream twice. You know what I mean? So, yeah. But to my knowledge, dream. And I will go to my grave saying it was a dream. They were dreams. But
what was the dream?
They were my memory of it, and I was quite young. I mean, I feel like I was 4, 5. In my memory, we lived in a housing development in the Midwest, townhouses. And there was a sort of area behind the houses that was sort of a common area for that the kids would play in. In my memory of the dream, there was a UFO in that common area. Other children from the neighborhood were there. And there was some sort of being or something. And I kind of remember lights. Beyond that, I don't really remember much of the dream, to which I attribute just the passage of time, not mind erasure. So that's my earliest memory of, and I knew what it was in the dream. So it must have been in the sort of popular consciousness enough that I understood what I was looking at. So yeah, that's my earliest memory of anything sort of UFO related, but it happened when I was quite young. So I've always been interested in it. I was always interested in psychic phenomena. Although like I don't have any psychic abilities. But I remember as a kid, I asked for like books about how to teach yourself to become psychic. And I would lay in my bed and try to follow the exercises, got absolutely nowhere with it, grew frustrated, gave it up. In high school, I did have a UFO sighting. It was a sort of classic. What in my head at the time, I thought of it as a fireball.
Okay.
I didn't know the word orb. I don't think it was in the, it wasn't something people talked about. And I remember we were coming back. I was with my girlfriend and my best friend at the time, and we were returning from the movies through a wooded area in New Jersey, and out of the car window, we saw this thing just kind of going like that across the sky. And I thought that it must be a small plane crashing. And so we tried to follow it, thinking somebody's going to be hurt and we could be of assistance, but we just couldn't. There was no way to, you couldn't follow it. You know, we were in the woods. And so it disappeared. And then the next morning, I remember I opened the local newspaper to see if there had been a plane crash. There had not. And then the thing that always strikes me as very odd about this story is that the people I was with and I never discussed it again. We never talked about it. And oddly, years later, I was telling this story to my kids, and I said to them, I bet if I text my girlfriend, my ex-girlfriend, who I was in sporadic contact with, she will have no memory of this event. And that's exactly what happened. I texted her. I was like, do you remember this? She goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. I described it for her. So I'm left with two conclusions. Either I've created a very elaborate false memory for myself for reasons that I have no, I don't know why I would do that or even how I would do that. And to my knowledge, I have no other false memories. Or I saw something and for whatever reason, she didn't remember it. And I'm not in touch with my best friend, but I feel positive he would not remember it either. So, A, why am I certain that they wouldn't remember it? And B, what did I see? Did I see anything? It was all very confusing to me and remains very confusing to me, especially because when you hear about these kinds of events and you hear about people having either different memories from each other or one person remembers and one person doesn't, in my mind, the stories that I've read, it generally that there's more of an interaction with whatever the thing is. Either it's closer or somebody gets out of a car or there's some telepathic messaging or so. I had none of that. Thing out my car window, fairly distant, not that distant. There was a tree line. It was just above the tree line. Hard for me to calculate how far away it was, but it wasn't that close. It felt like it was at a small plane distance. And I can't explain it. I don't know beyond that. And then obviously in 2017, the New York Times article sort of reinvigorated my interest in it. And concurrent with that, I was coming at it from a different angle. I was coming at it from really getting into near-death experiences and trying to understand what those are, and realizing that there's a fair amount of overlap between NDEs and stories of interactions with NHI.
Yeah.
So that pretty much catches us up. That's kind of where I am. And then, you know, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this stuff, talking about this stuff, trying to learn about this stuff. And I'm no expert by any means. I mean, I'm at best an enthusiastic amateur, but I have no end of fascination for all of this stuff. And I should just clarify, my interest in this stuff, what I've realized over the last couple of years, is I don't care about the nuts and bolts of it. I don't care about propulsion systems. I don't care about anti-gravity invention. I don't care about the technical aspects of it. What I care about is what it tells us about who we are and also what else is out there. And when I say out there, I don't mean necessarily physically. I mean more dimensionally, for lack of a better word. What else? What else is this reality? That's where my interest is.
Yeah, I follow you. You said a couple of interesting things there. I've got to go back to your experience, because you're not the first person that I've spoken to that has had like a multi-witness event and only one person's remembered it. And I'm not sure if you've read any John Keel, but you know, he talks about... Oh, you might find it interesting. So he talks about...
I mean, there's all these guys that I just have to read. I mean, I've barely read any Jacques Vallée. I've read a tiny bit. I haven't read any John Keel.
I find Jack is really interesting, but it's very dry. Whereas John Keel, kind of, there's clearly a creative kind of at work there, you know. I highly recommend start with the Mothman Prophecies, because it's, you know, it's a real event, but it's also his investigation bit by bit. And he talks about there seems to be a prime witness in each UFO encounter that the encounter is for. And he would work to kind of establish a connection with that person and then tell them, like, shut up, don't tell anyone about this. Because then as other people kind of brought him information, he could, you know, remove it or know that it wasn't the same event and stuff like that. And he also built this kind of almost psychic kind of medium network over time as well with these prime witnesses. And they would have messages for him from, you know, the other side, wherever, whatever this thing is, about events that were going to happen. And the events would happen,
they were channeling messages.
Seemingly so, yes. And that for me was the part where I was like, oh my God, this is all one thing. There's all crossover, you know, if we're talking channelers, psychics, ghosts, whatever, like this all seems to be connected. And also, you know, that famous example of Kurt Russell, who was flying in to Phoenix and saw the Phoenix lights from the air, and he landed and just didn't remember for years, you know? It's really interesting.
Well, I didn't know that aspect of the story.
He
didn't remember.
I'll have to send you the clip. But yeah, he's talking about it years later. And he says he was walking through the room and his wife, Goldie Hawn, was just sat watching TV. And it was a report about the Phoenix lights. And it mentioned a pilot landing at the airport during the event. And he was like, oh my God, wait, that was me. And it kind of jogged his memory, which is just strange, right? You'd think like your friends that, you know, they'd remember something so impactful.
You would remember seeing a craft the size of a Walmart superstore.
Right.
Right in front of you. You would remember that.
Right. It leaves an impression, yeah. Almost too much of an impression, almost like the brain can't handle it and just puts it away somewhere or something like that. I couldn't tell you, but it's really intriguing. You touched on it a little bit, but I've got to ask you, and I always preface this question with, this changes day to day for me. So when you answer this, this is just Michael's answer today, you know. What do you think it is?
So, like everybody else, I don't know. My impressions are very jumbled, very discombobulated, and very not cohesive. But it seems to me indisputable at this point that our present understanding of reality is woefully incomplete, that we do not seem to have even a basic understanding of who we are as a species, which is a very curious conclusion to draw, that one would feel. And this seems to be a fairly universal human conceit, that one feels like there is something beyond what one knows oneself to be. It's a very confusing and strange sense that I feel like all people have, that we understand ourselves to be this body, this physical body, but then all of us also seem to have the sense that there is something more to us. That alone, and that's the tiniest part of it, although it unlocks the door to all of these questions. But that question alone, like why should any species feel that way? It's a very, very odd, confounding sense that we have. And that sense certainly seems to be the progenitor for all religions. And then we can talk about whether religions are externally driven or internally driven. I don't know. Nobody knows. So that's the first thing. It's like we seem to not have a very accurate picture of reality. We seem to have known that we have an incomplete picture of reality for our entire history. As long as people have been thinking about this, Plato was talking about this, and he wasn't the first. So, concurrent with the understanding that reality is more/different than we believe it to be, there seems to be a way for some other intelligence, whether that's internally generated, collectively generated, or whether there actually is some sort of external intelligence, be it alien or otherwise, but there seems to be some ability for an intelligence that is not known to us to communicate with us. So there seems to be a kind of internal to external drive on humanity's part, and there seems to be an external to internal drive on some other entity's part to communicate with us. That has been true across cultures and across millennia. Those communications seem to produce, at times, phenomenological consequences that we don't understand. So whether that's spirit communication, telepathy, whether that's alien abductions, whether it's near-death experiences, there's all this kind of metaphysical stuff that on the surface shouldn't be related, but all seems to be interconnected in some way. And the umbrella term for that is the phenomena. And that's all I know about it. I don't understand anything beyond that.
I love that answer. And I love that you started with those three magic words, I don't know. Is that my red line in this subject is as soon as I find someone that says, I know what this is and it's X, Y, Z, I, you know, block them, I stay far away.
Nobody knows, you know? Moses didn't know. Buddha didn't know. I'm not going to come on here and say, I know. You know what I mean?
That would be great, though. Moses didn't know, Buddha didn't know, but I know.
But I know.
Interesting that you say about, you know, there's levels of reality that we don't know about, because obviously I find when I talk to certain people, you know, we'll say words like frequency and resonance and dimensions, and they mean certain things to us that they might not mean to someone else. But I always fall back on, you know, you can look at Neil deGrasse Tyson, right? And he'll say, the universe is made up of dark matter and dark energy. It's 96%, and we don't know what it is. So everything that you see on this planet, our spaceships, our cars, our societal structures, you know, our jobs, everything, we did that with 4% knowledge of the universe. Like, what does that look like if we have 10% knowledge or 20% knowledge, you know?
Well, it's 4% knowledge of what we know.
Yes.
Meaning, you know, you could say like there's 4% of the observable universe, you know, but we know there's a vastness beyond that. And I think in the physical world, I suspect the same is also true for the, for lack of a better word, metaphysical world, that we're operating from just a tiny, tiny lens, and we have no idea what the broader vision is. And, you know, when you talk to people, when I listen to people talking about this, a lot of the times, or I've heard a lot of people say the same thing, which I guess I kind of believe, which is that if we were to, as humans, if we were to experience reality, you know, they say it would just shatter you. It would, you know, destroy you. That makes sense to me. It makes sense to me that our sensory system is a regulator, not a revealer, that everything coming in is meant to be dialed down so that we can just function and survive, which leads to the question, well, then why do you need to function and survive? What is your purpose here? Which goes back to the original fucking question, who are we? The fuck are we? And if it was just me who had this nagging sense that there's something else, I'd be like, okay, well, you're just damaged. But it's species wide. So is there an evolutionary purpose for that? Maybe. But it just seems odd. It just seems so odd. So to me, like, whatever the answer is, even if it turns out to be in utterly prosaic, that we can say, all right, well, we can trace the sort of evolution of consciousness, which obviously we can't do, and we can trace why people started having these very, very strange questions, and we have answers to that, and we have answers to sort of all the sort of strange phenomena that has been reported and we understand, like, that would be fascinating. Like, the most prosaic explanation for this stuff would be mind-blowing, whatever it is, because you have to incorporate people are seeing shit in the sky that shows up on radar signatures and has underseas. It has, you know, sonar registers, and we can see it on video, and we have photographs, and we have people who interact, so they say, with these things, thousands and thousands of people. So the most prosaic explanation for all this has to somehow incorporate that too. And I don't know how you come up with a prosaic explanation for that. I really don't.
Right. And there are aspects of it that are insane as well, just like the way that it seems to present in different ways, even to the same people in the same spot. They can look at the same thing and see two totally different things. And that's so far outside of our wheelhouse, right?
Mm-hmm. And there might be very, and again, there might be sort of prosaic neurological explanations for that. That if the brain is seeing something that it doesn't understand, it's going to interpret it through the lens of what it can compare and contrast from its own experience. And that might explain why two people see two different things, but they're both seeing something that neither one can explain. And they're having these profound experiences, interactions with these objects. I don't know what the prosaic explanation is, because you could say the most prosaic explanation would be, okay, these are domestic or foreign craft. Somebody is making these things here on Earth, but they're demonstrating capabilities that mainstream physics doesn't understand. How? So then the question is, well, then how the hell did somebody, some nation, some corporation so far exceed the bounds of conventional physics without anybody knowing? How is that possible? So to me, like, as soon as you start going down the rabbit hole of most prosaic explanations, you're already into the fantastical. You're already off into some detour that is probably even less believable than extraterrestrials coming. None of it makes sense, which is what's so appealing to people like me about it. What I love about it is the mystery.
Yeah, absolutely. And it strikes me every time as well that the people that really kind of grok that, what you just spoke about, seem to be creatives. It's the intuitive people that can entertain those like maybe spaces in the best way. And it makes me think of the end of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know, when we're communicating with the aliens via music and sound. And it's just like, there you go. There's the creative kind of thing again. Even the math, you know, to come up with those frequencies to communicate is creativity. And so I wonder if there's something there, you know, not to mention all the like songs and things like that, that supposedly were channeled from somewhere else. And, you know, going back to some of those Rush songs and things like that.
Yeah, all that stuff is really interesting to me. And it does relate, as you just said, to creativity. I'm sure of that. The idea of the muse is a very, very ancient, obviously, notion that there is some other intelligence that is conveying or inspiring creativity in humans. I've often heard about songwriters, like you just said, or poets talk about how, in the case of a poem, I wish I could remember the poet's name, but I can't. I know it's a female. She was saying how she often feels that she's just a receiver, that these poems that she writes are just out there, and it's her job to receive them and nothing else. Her job is just to accept the poem, write it down, and let it go. And I've heard other creative people talk about that as well. I've never experienced anything like that. I can't really even imagine how that feels. But Keith Richards used to talk about that. He would wake up in the night and he would keep a guitar by his bed because there were at least one or two of like the Rolling Stones, like super famous riffs came to him in dreams. And that sort of makes sense. Like you can go, all right, well, the subconscious is sort of generating stuff, and then it appears to him in dreams. But it seems, I don't know why, I have the sense that there's something more to it than that, that it's a little bit more nuanced and complicated than just the subconscious is churning. I feel like my sense is there's something about what that poet said that really resonates with me, that there is a kind of information field from which we can all draw. And maybe the way we draw from it is, if you're a poet, is you have language training. And if you're a musician, you have musical training. But that, I don't know, the older I get, the more inclined I am to suspect that something like the collective unconscious is real.
Yeah, same. And you see it all around us, right? Like, Mm-hmm. For example, when we had Bug's Life and Ants come out at the same time, and Deep Impact and Armageddon came out at the same time. And these ideas seem to be moments, and they find people. And I've even been there where I've had an idea and I've just thought, you know what? I don't have the skill to realize this. And I've written it down, stepped away. And then 2 months later, boom, a much more accomplished creative just produces it. And I'm just like, what is going on?
Right. I think there's something to that. And to me, like, that's sort of entry level, and a sort of baby step into the phenomena. Because once you take that step, the steps get crazier and crazier and bigger until you find yourself on the edge of a cliff going, well, there's the abyss. I guess I'm staring at it, and you're just waiting for it to stare back. And yeah. It does.
You become dear friends with it.
Yeah, you really do.
We actually just read a book, Dan Brown's Secret of Secrets, which kind of goes into all this in a very kind of, I'm going to say prosaic, but, you know, it's still amazing. But this kind of stuff we're talking about, when we understand it, it will just be nature, right? It's just part of nature and the universe that we don't understand. But, you know, thinking of
Except
something
that
like
I suspect what's going to happen is we will understand to a point, like we do with everything. And then once we reach that point, we'll be like, oh, shit. There's an infinite number of other points that we have to cross. Like, I don't think it stops. I think, you know, we're a young species, and it seems to me that we're growing and evolving really quickly. And my sense is we don't know shit yet, you know, that we're gonna 100 years, 1,000 years, whatever it is, once we do have some of these answers, they will only reveal way more questions, I think.
Yeah.
I don't see how it could be any other way.
That's the usual thing with this. Every UFO book I pick up, I'm like, oh, I'm going to get some more answers in here. And I come away with 1,000 questions or one answer, you know, every single time. And I wonder, you know, thinking about what you said about who are we, and John Keel's work. Again, he was a big proponent of the idea that we were being taught that we're in a nursery and this thing is going, here I am as this, understand this. And when you understand that, we can do the intermediate class and then we can just keep going up the levels. And sometimes people fall off and they don't want to, and they get, you know, it disengages. And other times it seems to engage with the people that are amenable to it.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, yeah. That's been my experience with it, and I suspect it's the species-wide experience with it. There are always people in communication with this, and they are forever running around going, "Hey, I'm in communication with this thing. You need to listen." And eventually, it seems like they either do or they don't. But the species as a whole, it feels like we're kind of incrementally moving towards that. I was listening to somebody yesterday talking about, it was a near-death podcast, and it was a really good one. And it was somebody talking about how the job of science ultimately is to prove. You could phrase it one of two different ways. You could phrase it either that God exists, or that love is the sort of foundational field. Consciousness/love is the sort of foundational field of our reality. And if you accept the premise, as these people do, that God is love, then you're saying the same thing. I have a very confused relationship with God, or the idea of God, as I think a lot of us do, for various reasons. But for me, the primary reason why, for decades and decades, really my whole life, I considered myself an atheist wasn't because I didn't think it was possible that there would be some sort of God-like intelligence, although it seemed unlikely. But the way that conception was presented to me as a Westerner living in the 20th and 21st century felt so false that I couldn't accept it in any way, shape, or form. Like the idea of calling God Lord, for example, really rubbed me the wrong way. And it might just be because I'm an American. And so, you know, my sort of allergy to monarchy and to the idea of a kind of universal caste system, I'm just sort of highly allergic to that because it seems like it diminishes the value of the individual or even of the species. But when I've reconceptualized the idea of God as a field, an information field, as the sort of primary motivator and mover, and moreover, once I sort of understood the larger idea of non-dualism, then the idea of God started to resonate with me to the point where I'm now inclined to believe in it as an abstraction in need of definition, but that it is there, that there is something.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think very similar, you know, Catholic school, but some stuff happened with priests in my school and children. And so obviously I, you know, it was like bad rash to me. I just ran the other way. And something in the subject that I have a lot of trouble with is you've got to have a lot of faith in the things people are telling you and what you're hearing and this other higher power that, you know, supposedly we're encountering. So it's something that I think about often. And some of my favorite conversations about UFOs have been with priests because it always comes down to this idea of what is God. And we find so much agreement in it when I say, you know, I'm an atheist, but I look out in the universe and I see the stars moving and I see all of the forces at play. And I think of that as God, you know, it's the clockwork of the universe. And the guy, the priest I was talking to was like, yeah, that's exactly it. I just choose to dedicate my life to it and worship it. And you choose to do other things whilst thinking about it, but it's present for both of us, you know?
That was also an idea, and I still have a lot of trouble with it. The idea of worship to me feels very peculiar and antithetical to how I want to conduct my life. I don't want to be worshipful for the same reason. I feel like it robs you of agency in a certain respect. I can understand being in awe of something and being awe-filled. I can understand wanting to be in communion with something greater than myself. By me rejecting the idea of a Lord, isn't me trying to elevate myself isn't me saying, I don't think there's anything greater than me in the universe. That's absurd. But what it is, I guess, an attempt to maintain my own agency as I move through this reality. Like the phrase God-fearing has always struck me as peculiar and wrong-headed. If there is a God, I don't want to be fearful of it. I want to be in communion with it. And the idea of somebody being God-fearing as a virtue, it just seems very strange to me. And I've never been able to wrap my head around that.
Yeah. I love what you're saying about agency there. You know, I think about the agency bit when there's so much time stuff involved with a phenomena, right? Like people lose time. They seem to, you know, we touched on channeling already. That's a loss of agency, really. You know, we see it in the Disclosure Day trailer, Spielberg's new one. It happens to someone and she freaks out as it's happening because why wouldn't you, right? We think of ourselves as having free will. And like you say, it's much more subtle, right? Like the people around us affect us. Society around us affects us. So are our choices truly our own? And for the record, you know, even as a British person that's now living in America, I left because of the monarchy. I am also allergic.
Really?
There's most people in Wales, we do not kowtow to the monarchy. They're for the English, not the British. That's what we all say.
Yeah. That's really funny. I do think, see, you talked about testimony. And one of the big reasons that I've moved over in my belief system is because of testimony, is because I've listened to hundreds, if not thousands of people describe either their encounters with non-human intelligence or their near-death experiences, or in the case of my own mother, she had a very strange moment, and it was just a moment. She had been in poor health for years and years, and the doctors found a mass in her when they were doing a checkup. The doctor said, basically, look, given your history and everything we know about you, we're pretty sure this is cancerous, and we're pretty sure it's inoperable. And they took a biopsy and they said, essentially, get your affairs in order because you're going to die from this. So she's freaked out. She's waiting for the biopsy results. It's like a long weekend or something. She's with her partner. They're supposed to go back to the hospital to get the biopsy results. The doctor wants to meet, and she's in the car driving with her partner, and she hears a voice, and the voice says, it's benign. She goes to the hospital, tests come back. The doctor says, I don't know, it's benign. And she's like, I know. So when you hear testimony like that from your own mother, it leads me to conclude that I've heard so much testimony, and it's the weight of all that anecdotal evidence that finally persuaded me that this is real. I don't know what it is, but it's real. And I don't necessarily trust any one narrator. And I don't even necessarily trust all of the narrators, in the sense that I'm confident everybody's getting something wrong about it. But the breadth of the testimony across all these different areas, to me, is just overwhelming and conclusive, particularly when it comes to NDEs. Oh, I mean, UFOs too. I mean, the physical evidence for UFOs is just, yes, there's UFOs. The government says so. Now, there's UFOs. We don't know what the fuck they are. There's UFOs. But the NDE stuff, the abduction stuff, testimony carries a lot of weight with me, just because of the volume of it.
Right. And, you know, the testimony, it's not like it comes from one group of friends over a weekend, right? It's people in all cultures throughout all of history talk about this stuff happening to them. And it's not just people like you and I, it's, you know, officials and kings and, you know, it's just, it's happening and we don't know what it is. One of my favorite theories that I heard, it was from a book called The Cosmic Serpent. It was talking about DNA as a life form that came here on a meteor and mixed and produced life as a way of hiding, and that it has a means to kind of communicate with us in certain ways. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. You know, I hold it very lightly.
That's similar to the plot of Pluribus. Have you seen Pluribus?
Yes, and I actually have a question for you later on. We're going to get into it, because I was like, I think Michael will be into this show, so we'll get into it. But it touches on a lot of what we talk about in the subject, and I'm very surprised that the community hasn't just grabbed that show, and talked about all the issues that it's bringing up, because so many, right? So the phenomena can be maddening, for sure, but... And I ask this because, you know, you do a lot of kind of news breakdowns, thinking about, you know, what's going on in the country and the world at the moment, which is equally maddening, right? So how do we approach this with critical thinking, I guess? Because there seems to be an issue around that in the subject, for sure.
I think in this field in particular, maybe all fields, skepticism is your best friend. I don't see how you approach this as anything other than a skeptic. if you come into it and you go, yeah, mantids are real and angels are real and, you know, Bashar is communicating through Darylenka and like all this shit, I feel like you're going to lose your grip on reality almost immediately. I simultaneously believe everything and nothing. And I don't know how else to approach this subject. I take everything at face value. Like, I used to listen to Art Bell on Coast to Coast. And for the longest time, I thought he was essentially making fun of his people who called in. Because he treated them all with respect and they were saying the craziest shit. And I'd be like, oh, this guy just thinks they're nuts the way I think they're nuts. And what I realized later was that wasn't the case at all. That he was deeply interested in the phenomena, in all of its aspects. And so his approach was to take everything at face value, not to say, I believe this. And I'm incorporating this into my worldview, but to keep the mind open to the possibility that there is truth in whatever these people are saying. And that has been my approach to all of this in the last 10 years or so. Just come at me, bro. Come at me with your story. Let me hear it. Let me evaluate it. And I know that I'm a very gullible person. Like, I just am. Like, if you tell me something, I'm going to believe you. I take people at their word. But I also feel like I've developed enough critical thinking skills to be like, okay, you said X, Y, and Z, and X makes sense to me, and Y makes sense to me, but Z doesn't make any sense to me. And so I need to like look in that direction, either with follow-up questions to you or just go off on my own and see what I can find. That approach to for me has been very helpful and grounding. But again, we started this conversation by me saying, I don't know. And we will end this conversation with me saying, I don't know. Because as we've discussed, the more you learn about this, the vaster the subject becomes, to the point where I can no longer see the contours of the room that I walked into when I started looking into UFOs.
Yeah, too true. And I think you're very much like me, Michael. You know, I always say, take things seriously, hold them lightly. You know, like you say, don't make it personality and belief system. Just take it and hold it, enjoy it, try and pass it. No one has the answers. So, you know, you're not worse off than anyone else if you do that, really. What did you think this year of... Oh, sorry, go on.
Oh, no, go ask.
Well, I was going to pivot. So if you want to respond with that one, you can feel free. Okay, cool. What did you think of the hearings this year, the UFO hearings that we've been seeing?
This year, in particular, I paid much less attention because... disclosure, official disclosure, feels like a shell game to me. I don't understand what's happening. It feels like there's several things happening at once. All of it feels like disinformation to me. All of it feels, I feel like I'm being propagandized from a lot of the big names in ufology. I don't know that they're doing it intentionally or not, but there's a little bit of, or a lot bit of, Lucy with the football and disclosure. And I've gotten to the point where I no longer care what the government has to say about it. I no longer care about official channels, because the things that they're talking about aren't really even the things I'm interested in. Like, everybody in this community has moved so far beyond whatever they're talking about in congressional hearings, that anything they're going to tell me is going to feel warmed over. So unless and until the government is willing to lay out the entirety of the case and to do so in as transparent a way as they can, incorporating the words "I don't know" into their presentation, until they're willing to do that, I would just assume, I don't give a shit. Like, the last person that I really paid a lot of attention to was David Grush, because he felt and feels to me utterly sincere. He felt like a black swan in this whole movement. I don't know if that's true or not, but it definitely felt like he came out of nowhere. And by doing so, it seemed like he upset some people. But then, I don't know, the like Jake Barber world. I don't know. There's stuff happening in all of it that's making me very uneasy. The Peter Thiel connections, the fact that this whole thing has like the most conservative Republicans have really run with this thing for reasons that I don't understand, but I find troubling. Like, all of it combined makes me feel like there's a bad scene there that I don't want to be a part of. I don't know what it is, but it's given me a little bit of the heebie-jeebies. So I'm much more interested in pursuing it the way I'm pursuing it, which is through the consciousness piece, which, you know, ties to everything else that we were talking about. That to me feels richer and more rewarding. And I feel like the people involved in that and that aspect of it don't have the same commercial interests that people like Peter Thiel or Gary Nolan or Tim Taylor, those guys all have. Like, whenever they're talking about like commercializing this stuff, it just makes me, like, I understand it. I understand that, yeah, we should have free energy and somebody's going to make a buttload of money off that. But it really rubs me the wrong way and makes me feel like, I don't know what we're doing here, because that's not what's interesting to me at all. Making money off this, I don't understand the appeal of that.
It's a very human thing, isn't it? To see this like grand, maybe universal truth and be like, how can I monetize that?
I know. I mean, I get it. Like, if you go, okay, well, this could revolutionize infrastructure and travel, and maybe we could all make a lot of money in the process. I go, okay, I understand that as a human concern, but it's not my concern. And I would just as soon let them have it. Not that I'm going to be building anything, not that I'm going to be reverse engineering a downed craft, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure. So we have our first audience question. We're hitting like basically all the questions I have to ask you now. You kind of touched on there, so we're just going to dive into each. So Garrett from Patton's Tell Stories, he asks,
I love Michael, that guy.
He's wonderful, isn't he? Both him and Klaus, like, that is a show that more people need to be listening to, because they talk about the Steel stuff all the time, and I think they see it for what it is, you know? So Garrett was very excited to send in a question for you. So here's his question. He says, Michael, how is Rhett Burleson attending UFO conferences with people like Jaime Massan, a known hoaxer, appearing on Alex Jones's InfoWars, and submitting the testimony collected by Dr. Stephen Greer into the official congressional record, affected your view of David Grush's credibility? And you touched on it a little bit, but just, you know.
It hasn't to this point. Grush remains credible to me unless proven otherwise. He strikes me as somebody who is deeply committed to getting this information out there and isn't particularly worried about who his allies are in Congress to make that happen. Now, that might be a good thing. It might be a bad thing. I don't know. But I've heard him say things like, this administration, meaning the Trump administration, I think has a firm handle on this. Now, because of who I am, I don't think this administration has a firm handle on anything other than their own malevolent designs. But that's my own bias from a lot of different other things. It's entirely possible that Grush is correct, that there is a sort of sincere contingent in the Trump administration who is working to get this information out. That is possible. Having somebody like Berlinson, who seems very suspect to me as a person, enter his information at the Congressional Record. Okay, that's okay. Maybe he knows some, maybe Grush knows something. I know Grush knows something about these people that I don't. And whatever he knows that I don't, at this moment in time, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. And to assume that he is working for greater transparency from the government, and he will work with whatever administration he has to get that information out. That's my sense. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I'm just going to widen Garrett's question a little bit, because there are some things you touched on there, you know, talking about Burleson. I know I have thoughts on Luna that you probably share. We seem to be like-minded. So what do you think about the sincerity of people like Burleson, Luna, Tim Burchett, and that Secrets Task Force? Do you think it's a sincere effort, or do you think it's just a distraction?
So as you mentioned, I'm on a TV show called Have I Got News For You. Tim Burchett was a guest on our show. And of course, I asked him about UFOs off camera. And he seemed totally sincere in his interest and appreciation for the subject. He opened his phone. He showed me some UFO photos that I don't think are public. I don't think they were classified or anything, but they were on his phone. Photos I hadn't seen before that were really interesting. They were discs, but they were almost like bronzed, you know, almost like a bronze color, which was something I hadn't seen before. So I believe Burchett, I believe his sincerity, which makes me believe that Luna is sincere, Berlinson is sincere, Moskowitz is sincere. I do think there is sincerity here because, you know, these are just people. And their interests are going to reflect what people's interests are. What I don't know, and I think this is an open question, is whether what they're being told is accurate. And if they're being led down a path by interested actors for nefarious, not even nefarious reasons, for let's say governmental contract reasons, which to me are nefarious reasons. But more interesting to me is the Senate side, where Chuck Schumer 3 years in a row introduced, what's the name of the act?
The UAP Disclosure Act.
Thank you. The UAP Disclosure Act. 3 years in a row. He's willing to affix his name as the most powerful Democrat in the country at this point to legislation that defines non-human intelligence multiple times and talks about recovering craft and eminent, like, just lays, just the legislation itself is tantamount to disclosure. That to me is fascinating. And the fact that somebody like Marco Rubio, who politically is obviously not aligned with Schumer in any way, shape, or form, but he's also in the Gang of Eight with Schumer. Rubio's not saying, look at crazy Chuck Schumer over there introducing ET bills. What a nutcase that guy is. Rubio isn't doing that. Nobody's doing that. Why? Why isn't he suffering politically for introducing what is essentially a Cocoa for Cocoa Puffs piece of legislation into Congress? Yes, the legislation hasn't passed. And then you ask yourself, well, why? Why hasn't it passed? Why is it being blocked by Rogers, right? Or is it Turner? I always get those two guys mixed up.
Yeah, there's a bit of a mess around who's blocking it. Like, some people have said AIDS, other people have pointed fingers, and it just seems to be a circle of people pointing fingers at the other saying they blocked it. There's no real answer, you know?
Right. So all of that's very interesting to me. More interesting to me than the House side is the Senate side, just because it's a little more close to the vest. It's just quieter over there. But it feels like that's where the real action is happening to me.
Sure. Yeah, I'd agree. The quiet people are the ones, you know, they always say, you know, if you go onto an accident scene, you want to be interested in the people that aren't screaming and speaking first, right. and help them. So yeah, in that sense, totally with you. I have a question from Chris Walford here. He asks, what do you make of Thiel's and the Palantir connection to UFOs? And if you wouldn't mind here, because I know a lot of listeners here won't necessarily know who Thiel is or Palantir is, do you mind just kind of giving it a little context as well for people?
Peter like Thiel is Thiel? A billionaire entrepreneur whose company Palantir is a comic book villain company whose job it is, seems to be, to create a global surveillance state. And the U.S. government is, and other governments are, purchasing a lot of software and surveillance shit from Thiel. They're also involved, I think, in, I know they have a lot of military contracts, and I suspect they do things, some pretty dark shit that the public doesn't know about. I don't know why Peter Thiel seems to be as interested in this subject as he appears to be. There's a lot of talk about him going around the world warning of the literal Antichrist, which he, for whatever reason, has become convinced is real. And his interest in the Antichrist seems somehow related to his interest in UFOs, all of which is tied with his surveillance stuff, all of which seems to have some kind of connection with the sort of global official disclosure narrative, all of which seems to have something to do with the drones in New Jersey and various other drone sightings. It's a very, very obscured relationship that this guy has with both the government and with this topic. Jesse Michaels, the interviewer from American Alchemy, is also involved with Peter Thiel, as is J.D. Vance, as are many others, as I think is Rubio. So, yeah, it's he seems to be at the nexus of a lot of this in the same way that Robert Bigelow is at the nexus of a lot of this in a different capacity.
Yeah, for sure. I saw a great interview where someone was asking Peter Thiel, like, hey, you know, you're worried about the Antichrist coming, and let's put aside whether we believe that or not, you know, that's your belief. But do you realize the tools that your company is making, Palantir, this surveillance software, would be the exact kind of thing that the Antichrist would love and would use as a tool if it kind of appeared on Earth right now? And he gave a bunch of excuses, but it's always struck me as, I mean, the company's named after the evil guy's device from Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah. I don't know if I gave a good overview of Peter Thiel, if you want to add to that.
No, I thought you did good. Comic book villain is pretty much on point, you know, military contracts. In the UK, his company's taken over the NHS. So it's a lot of kind of data passing. And that, for me, kind of sends up flags of, oh, okay, so if you're looking at, oh, after all these data kind of, you know, shoots, then you're going to be able to take data out that you don't want others to see. And so when we're talking about the UFO subject, cool, you're going to get all the videos. You're going to be able to derive this propulsion for your surveillance state and all that kind of thing. And it's just, it's a little bit scary, right?
Oh, it's a lot scary, especially because, you know, he's one of these guys who essentially wants to become a feudal lord. You know, there's all these guys who just want to create fiefdoms all over the planet, but certainly in the U.S. and Greenland. If you wonder why Greenland's in the news, among other reasons, this is one of them. They want to create these little autonomous states where they get to play God. It's a very sort of troubling development that's happening, because we can easily see, with the emergence of the world's first trillionaire in the person of Elon Musk at some point in the next 5 years, we can easily see that individuals will now have the resources of nation states. Some of them already do. And what they do with that power and influence, you know, could be really bad.
Yeah. When thinking about the fiefdoms they want, I just think, okay, what would it look like if Jeff Bezos owned a country? We wouldn't be able to pee when we wanted to pee, right? You got to pee in bottles when you work for Amazon. The people there are bent over a barrel, and it would just be that writ large across society.
Yeah. I suspect some of these guys are going to get their wish. I mean, I suspect somebody's going to carve out some sort of land for them to experiment with, and I don't think it's going to go well, but I think they're going to get their chance. That's what's interesting to me about the sort of Peter Thiel relationship to the UFO subject, because one of the, I think, most compelling aspects of the UFO story is what it means for humanity's relationship to itself. Because if we get conclusive evidence that, yes, there is this one or 1 million other intelligent civilizations and or species or and species out there, that fundamentally changes the narrative that we tell ourselves about who we are and our relationship to each other. And it would seem to me that it would negate that overwhelming lust for power that certain people have to lord over other people, because now it's not about that anymore. There's something much more fundamental going on, which is that we're part of a galactic or universal life system. And so the idea of like wanting to control humanity seems to me so backwards and so bizarre that I just don't get it. I don't understand the appeal of this stuff to them other than just the opportunity to make shitloads of money. But who cares? They've already got shitloads of money. What right. do they want more billions for? I can't negotiate those two ideas for me. The idea of you believe in non-human intelligence and among humans, you want to dominate. That seems to me so weird. And yeah, so contrary to the spirit of this thing.
I totally agree. You know, where so many people in the subject, they're fascinated and they want to meet aliens, but they'll spend their time railing on illegal aliens and people with harder lives than them. And it's like, how do you expect to communicate with something from another planet in a decent way when you can't even look your neighbor in the eye and smile at them, you know?
Yeah. You just said that in about 10 seconds, way better than I took 30 minutes to say it.
I liked yours, though. It's 11. We're good. And there also seems to be like this weird, as all conspiracy stuff online, you know, we used to have Q. Now this UFO subject is kind of at a point where it's attracting a lot of right-wing presence. And for me, at least, and I think you've written on this, so I wanted to ask you about it just so you could elaborate. But for me, at least, like I regularly get these moments of just weirdness where I'm just like, oh, my God, I share an opinion with you who isn't, you know, willing to look at another person like a human being. It's a very odd feeling.
And this is, again, one of the reasons why I have, I wouldn't say divorced myself, but I'm on a trial separation from current sort of official ufology, because I do not trust their motives and I do not trust the information that's coming out of official ufology channels. I don't know what their game is. I really don't. I don't even say that like I think they're up to something evil. I just don't understand. I don't understand what's happening politically with this. So yeah, I'm very reticent to get too deep in that part of it. Like even somebody like Diana Pasolka, who I think is very much aware of the traps of all of this, even she feels like she's a little too close in some respects to the information machine. And I know she's aware of it. She's talked about it. But it's so weird. This subject is so fucking weird. Because as soon as you start peeling the onion, and it hasn't, I shouldn't even say that, it has happened to me. You start getting access. And you start getting information, what you think is information, from sources. And you have no idea what's true, what isn't, if you're just being somebody else's useful idiot, if you're being co-opted. And because of that, because I don't know, and because I don't trust these people, not because they're necessarily nefarious, but because I have no reason to trust them. And here I'm thinking of specifically somebody like Lou Elizondo or Gary Nolan or Chris Mellon. I 100% am convinced that they feel like they're working towards something important, each one of them. But I don't know what that is. And I don't know what my role is to them. And when I say mine, I mean all of us in the community. I don't know if they're using us for something that they're not telling us about. Lou in particular feels like that to me. It's not that I think he's nefarious. I don't know. It's just that I don't know. And there's just too many questions around these people. The Skywatcher people, same thing. I just don't know. And so I don't trust them.
Yeah, I hear you. Skywatcher for me is an especially big one because, you know, they said, oh, we're going to have XYZ out in the next 3 months. And then they moved the goalposts. And then they said by the end of 2025, and we're there and nothing has happened. And they're, you know, radio silent. So it just raises my eyebrows.
So the first one with that was TTSA for me was that. It was like, and it's not like I doubt Tom DeLonge's enthusiasm, passion, and sincerity. It's that I doubt the information that he believes. And I doubt that he has, and that organization ever had the capabilities to do what they said they were going to do. And when you have that spectacular of a flame out, it makes it that much harder to trust any other entity that comes after it, in particular, something like Skywatcher. I just don't know.
Yeah, I hear you.
Like, so to the point where I'm sort of like giving Stephen Greer another look. I'm sort of like, well, maybe this guy's on the level. You know, it's like, I don't know. I don't trust any of these people. It's not that I distrust them. It's just that I don't trust them. And so I sort of have to like talk to somebody one-on-one. I had a conversation with Lou and I thought it was weird. I thought it was a weird conversation. And I don't know. Like there's maybe one or two people that I've met that I go, okay, I feel like we're on the same team here. And I feel like I don't have to question that. But what's funny is the person I'm thinking of in particular, I think she holds me at arm's length for the same reason I hold all those other people at arm's length. You know what I mean? Because she doesn't know where I'm coming from. And so even though I trust her, I don't think she trusts me, which is totally fair. Totally fair.
But you speak to something that's really important, and that's having some discernment as you're talking to people. And also, you know, what we talked about earlier, take it seriously, hold it lightly. You don't have to decide right now. You can just live with this and you can go on your own journey with this and you know, try and be a psychic spy if you want to and see if it works and see what you take from that, you know? Mm-hmm. So And this is a very direct question, and I think I know what you're going to say, and I agree with you. But is Trump...
Wow. Don't even ask the question.
I know, right? Just psychic. I've been doing my work. is Trump, as many people in the community say, the disclosure president? Is he going to guide us?
To me, it's irrelevant. Because even if he did disclose, 70% of the country wouldn't believe him. I wouldn't believe him. Whatever came out of his mouth, I wouldn't believe. So it's an irrelevant question to me. And I guess, you know, there's probably some people who would feel the same about if Biden had done it. I think for disclosure to gain purchase, it's going to have to come from multiple people simultaneously, maybe multiple governments simultaneously, and it's going to have to be backed up with some pretty compelling evidence. And I don't see that ever happening. And I don't care. That's the other thing. I don't care. It's not interesting to me anymore what the government has to say or doesn't have to say, because the things that I'm interested in are not in the purview of governments. They're in the purview of humanity. And anything the government is going to tell me, anything the government's going to tell me about this subject, chances are people like me and you already know. It would be nice to get evidentiary support for some of this stuff and for them to like lay out, this is what we know and this is why we know it. That would be fantastic. I just don't believe that's ever going to happen.
Sure. I think the same. Probably because of all the terrible things they've done in the name of this kind of pursuing the truth and, you know, what we hear from the legacy program. Do you think if the truth was revealed, and of course this depends on what the truth is, but at the most basic level, do you think the world could handle it? Could people handle?
Well, yeah, I think it totally depends on what you just said, what the truth is. So yeah, I mean, the world is certainly primed to accept the existence of an extraterrestrial species. I think that would come on the news. It would be all we were talking about for about a day and a half, and then some celebrity would get divorced. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think people would care. I think people are already so primed for that, that not that it would be a non-story, but it wouldn't be the story that I think everybody thinks it would be, unless, you know, there was the classic visitation. I mean, if ships start showing up like in Independence Day, yeah, that's going to be an incredible story. But if scientists are just like, yeah, there's aliens, we've kind of known about it for a while, people would be like, oh, fuck, okay. Wait, what happened with Kim Kardashian? Like, that's the way it would be. But if it gets more exotic than that, if the truth is interdimensional, temporal, if it's genetic engineering of humanity from, you know, the time we were diverging from our primate ancestors, then yeah, things start to get a little messier, I think. But that's what I want. I mean, I really want to welcome that mess. I really want to welcome the rewriting of our history and who we are and what we are. And I think, as I've alluded to, I suspect a lot of this can be found in religion. Just the consistency of religious narratives over the last few millennia, you go, they're all saying the same thing. Why? Why are they all saying the same thing? They're all these prophets are somehow given the truth, and somehow that truth all aligns. Why is that? That's interesting to me.
Yeah, same. So from that, there's, you know, something has happened over the last 2 years that isn't UFOs that I think can kind of give us some clues as to how the world embraces it or doesn't embrace it. And I wanted to talk to you about AI, because that impacts your work, right? Like, they're trying to replace you, and they're trying to place me in any job that I can go get. How has that impacted your life?
To this point, not at all. I've just started, I wasn't using it at all. I was just sort of, I wouldn't say, I'm ethically opposed to it AI doing creative work, you know, stealing songs and films and photos and all the rest of it. But I find for like just purely kind of like number crunching and analytical stuff, or if I have a very specific question about something that I know it's going to take me an hour to find online, that it's been incredibly useful. Like I was just like the other day, I was just like, hey, I just bought this record player. And I'm like, hey, I have these two very specific components. And for some reason, I'm having this issue. Can you help me? And it did. Like, it's a tool. And I feel like it has the potential to be a really good tool. And like all tools, the potential to be a really terrible tool. I'm highly dubious about the idea of AI ever achieving consciousness. Highly, highly dubious. And I guess that is because I think I'm of the belief, I'm not sure if I'm of the belief, but I think I'm of the belief that consciousness is in an unreplicable category. I don't think it's replicable. I think it's omnipresent, but I don't think it's replicable. I don't think humans or machines have the ability to generate consciousness. I could be wrong.
Interesting that you put it that way. Again, I'm kind of with you there. I feel like there's a thing outside us and different beings challenge in different ways. You know, the Greeks thought dogs were rocks and not life forms. And look where we are now, you know, with how we treat our pets.
So now we're at the point where we're going, rocks might be life forms. And I'm increasingly of that opinion.
Right.
Conscious entities.
It's almost like life is, or we're starting to understand that life is a process, not a thing in and of itself. And so when we look outside, we can kind of go, oh, is the ocean alive? Yeah, you could explain it in that way, you know, like we're alive now, but when I go into the earth and I become a part of all these other processes after I pass away, am I still conscious? Is there still a part of me that's interacting with the world? Yeah. So, aren't I kind of still alive in a way? You know, it's a really loosey definition.
Yeah, I think if you accept the idea that consciousness is fundamental, then I think what follows from that is that forms, all forms, you, me, the rock, are consciousness expressing itself temporarily in this arrangement of atoms and molecules, and then it will disperse into some other form. And if you accept that, and I think I do, then I think you have to accept that on a certain level, yes, a rock is conscious, if for no other reason than consciousness is a field from which everything emerges. And so, yes, on a certain sort of fundamental level, consciousness, this blade of grass, this lampshade, every fucking thing has an element of consciousness, because the thing isn't the thing. The lampshade isn't a lampshade. The lampshade is a loose confederation of consciousness represented in this shape. Not that the lampshade is thinking, not that the lampshade has conscious experience, but that consciousness itself is the lampshade and the lampshade is consciousness. It sounds so sort of New agey and whatever, but fuck it. I guess that's where I'm at. Wait, my computer's about to shut off. I need to plug it in. So I need to find.
Oh, yeah. Grab that. We don't have too much longer left. If you've got to go, let me know. You're hard out, but I have literally like three questions left.
What time is it? Oh, I actually do have to go. I apologize. I need to run.
That's okay.
I didn't realize we had gone so long.
Time flew. Do you have to run right now, or can I squeeze one more question in?
I have like literally 1 minute.
Okay, I'm not going to pressure you. I won't squeeze it in. Thank you so much for giving me your time, Michael. Let's do this again sometime. It was great to connect.
I'm always happy to talk about esoteric shit with people who are interested in esoteric shit, because nobody else in my life is.
Well, I'll chuck you an email with my number and we can text and stuff. And yeah, I'd be very up for that.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Spotify or on your chosen platform. If you could like, share, or subscribe, that would be very much appreciated. It helps us find our tribe. If you'd like to support the show and get access to a 1-hour live chat each month and early ad-free access, you can find us at Patreon. Just follow the link in the show notes or at our website, tobehumanshow.com. And feel free to reach out via the contact page or email at hello@tobehumanshow.com. You can also find us on Blue Sky, Threads, Instagram, or X at tobehumanshow. As always, remember to be curious. The universe is bigger than we know.
What It Means to Be Human is a Double Barrel production. This week's episode was produced by Roz Mugford and Dan Zetterstrom. Sound post-production by Parker Mosley, with technical support from Dale Mugford. Our theme music is by Thunderbird.